be seated. Thank you. Yes, it's true. I married my therapist. Well, for those of you who weren't here in the first session, I'm Big Mac. I've been married to the brain actually 31 years now. Yeah, 31 years, yes. And I'm the subject, thank you. I'm the subject of most of the books and the DVDs in the back there. There is a special, a four-book special, Spirit, Soul, and Body Combination. You save yourself some money. It's 55. You save yourself, I thought it was 11. You actually save yourself $17. So that's a good special for you. It's called the Mind Toolbox. I always like to start off with a funny, just get you relaxed, get the endorphins going and so on. Who's ever heard me on YouTube before? Who's seen me on YouTube? Because I don't like to tell the same joke twice. So I'm hoping you haven't heard this one. But anyway, there's this pastor down the road from you. He sends his wife to a conference in New York City. And he's got a small church just starting off, and they're struggling a bit financially. And she comes back with a $1,000 dress from Macy's. He says, "What on earth possessed you to do such a thing? You know we're struggling." She says, "I don't know. I was in this change room, and the devil was saying, try it on, try it on, try it on." He said, "You know the word. You should have said, get behind me, Satan." She said, "I did." He said, "You look good from behind as well, baby."
So that's the excuse that we use when we need more clothes. Need. Okay, so good morning, everyone. It's lovely to be here with you today, and I'm really excited to share, to continue sharing on the mind-brain connection. And I always love it when the pastors of the house let me do multiple sessions, different content, because honestly, to try and fit all my 30 years of research in one session is hard. So it's always good to, you know, there's so much to share. So I'll just pick up a couple of things from the first session, and just so that you can see where I came from. In the first session, I was mentioning something very important, and that's that we've hit a very interesting time in history where people are dying 15 to 25 years younger than they were just a short few decades ago, and they are dying from preventable lifestyle diseases. So this is data that was released from the CDC and federal data, and it's now been, this research has continued. It's been heavily discussed to the United Nations, World Health Organization. So it's pretty much a global problem where we see people dying younger instead of older and living shorter lives from preventable lifestyle diseases. And I can't stress enough how important it is that we understand what I have just said, because it's preventable lifestyle diseases. There's no need for us to be dying in droves like it is happening now of people dying younger. So for up in this data was initially identified between 2014 and 2015, and then more research was done, and every year more research is added to this. And why they are asking the questions, researchers are asking the questions, and I've also done some of this research, why is this happening? And they track it down to two major issues. And the first major issue is mind management, okay? And the second major issue is diet. Okay, so I address these in all my work because I want to try and help people not become part of the statistic. Because if we don't change it, we are going to find that our children are going to die and our grandchildren are going to be dying younger than this generation. So that's very scary. And it's growing and it's global. Okay, so I've stressed that, and I want to stress it's preventable. So this doesn't need to be happening. And I want to stress that, why is this happening? Because we're not managing our minds correctly. So I'm a mind specialist. I'm a neurocognitive neuroscientist, and I've researched the mind-brain connection for 30 years. I've developed different theories. I have done a lot of clinical research. I still do clinical research. We're about to do a whole series of clinical trials starting in April. We've done one trial now over the December period, and the clinical trials that I do are dealing with non-pharmacological, non-drug interventions for things like anxiety, depression, and intrusive thoughts, that kind of thing. So for mental health. So we're also told another thing. We are told that mental ill health is on the rise. You've all heard that, haven't you? Okay, that mental ill health is on the rise, and there's 1 in 4 people are diagnosed with mental ill health, and we need more screening, and we need more money to find the neurobiological causes and the genetic causes so that we can treat this problem. And there's a tremendous amount of misinformation about this out there, and a tremendous amount of fear-mongering, where people are being made very frightened of something that I'm happy to tell you, is not a truth. Okay? Mental ill health is not on the rise. That is not accurate science at all. What is on the rise is the mismanagement of mental health. And that mismanagement of mental health is related to the statistic of people dying 15 to 25 years younger. The mismanagement of mind, the mismanagement of our mental health is leading to death, people dying younger. For the first time in decades, this trend has been reversed, the trend of people living longer. So what we are seeing is a mismanagement of mind as a global crisis. Mental ill health is not anything new. People have always battled with their mind since the beginning of time. It is the human condition. You're in life. Life is tough. Bad things happen. Struggles happen. Traumas happen. We make wrong decisions. That is what all humans do. And all humans go through different levels of trauma. If you're not struggling at the moment, within the next 5 years, according to statistics, something will happen. And if you're not struggling, someone in your close family is struggling at the moment. Or if you're struggling, someone in your close family is not. So there's this interesting thing going on that we are all actually instinctively aware of, and that's that life is tough, okay? And we're all going to battle, and we're all a little bit crazy. And there is no normal brain. According to research that's been released from Yale University plus other universities now, there is no normal brain, which means something very, very interesting. Because what we have happening in the whole world of mental ill health, which is contributing to the mismanagement of mind and causing a lot of death, and diet, bad diet, is also leading to all kinds of illnesses in our bodies that are shortening lifespan, okay? And then technology is causing isolation, which is also affecting mental ill health, and shortening lifespan. People die from the wrong food, from obesity, from fatty liver disease, from cardiovascular disease. Those, all the scary diseases, cancers, etc., that kill people come from various sources, and the sources can be tracked back, number one, to our thought life, how we're managing our mind. Number two, what we are putting into and onto our bodies, okay? And then also how we are connecting with others. So those three factors kind of all fall under mind, because how you eat is based on your mind. Your food choices are based on your mind. The health of your digestive system. In fact, the functioning of your digestive system is based on your mind. The decisions you make about how you're going to deal with the issues of life is your mind at work. So how you react to the issues of life, that's your mind. How you react in your relationships at work, etc., that's your mind. Okay? How you deal with the traumas of life, that's your mind. How you're dealing with the challenges of just being frustrated about things not going right, that is your mind. So in other words, what we are seeing is mind, 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 mind. And if we mismanage mind, if we say, if someone has been bullied repeatedly and they're too scared to go to school, and because they, when they get to school, they get bullied, and they, it's so traumatic for them that you find that they actually hang themselves at the age of 8, which is what's happening in our country and around the world at the moment, we know we have a problem. When an 8-year-old feels the need to hang themselves in a school bathroom because they're too scared to go to school, when parents are not hearing the pain, when the teachers are not responding, and I'm not, this isn't generalizing, but I'm saying this is what's happening. When we have shooters, all the stuff that's going on in our world, we are seeing something going on. And it's not that people are mentally ill and they're crazy and therefore they're shooting people, or they're mentally ill, that's why they hang themselves. That's terribly unfair to say to someone who's being bullied that you have a mental ill health issue, you have a broken brain. Already that person is suffering enough from being bullied. Now on top of it, you tell them that they have a mental disease, that they've got a diseased brain, that their brain doesn't look normal. That's why they are feeling depression or bipolar depression or suicidal thoughts or anxiety or intrusive thoughts, or they have the desire, they can't, that's why they're bullied. You're bullied because you have a brain disease. Can you see there's a lot of illogic here? Let's take a child who's maybe in the foster care system because of whatever parenting issues, and they happen to get abused abused physically, they get raped maybe multiple times, get sent from one foster home to the next. I mean, this is a very common story, and they get labeled with, they've got emotional issues, they're difficult at school because they're so lacking in love, which is such a normal part of humanity. And then they get told, they get start battling at school, they become a bit of a behavioral issue because they're traumatized, and then they get told, no, you've got ADHD, you've got a broken brain, you've got schizophrenia, and none of those labels are scientific categories. They're not based on solid research. They are. They came from, for 60 years ago, there was a couple of scientists, specifically one doctor, who said maybe there's a mental, a chemical imbalance in the brain when people get anxious. But it was never proven. And billions and billions and billions of dollars have been poured into trying to find the neurobiological cause in the brain of mental illness, the neurobiological or genetic cause of mental illness. And what's happened is a lot of confusion in terms of the way science is presented to the public, a lot of confusion in the messages that we are receiving, and then a lot of confusion when we look at what's going on around the world and the language and the propaganda of and the myth that has been literally invading our language has constantly put forward these things are happening because mental ill health is on the rise. And that is not the truth. If we come back down to the basics of what is actually going on, we will have a better understanding. And I'm going to try and demystify that for you now. But in order to do that, I want to just just give you a little bit of background to help you understand two things. First of all, your mind is not your brain. Okay, let me say that again. Your mind is not your brain. So when we talk about mind, the slide, if we just put the slide back up there, that preventable, people are dying from preventable lifestyle diseases, mind issues and management and diet, if you can put that slide up again. When we talk about mind, we're not talking about brain. When we talk about that there is no normal brain, the Yale study that I mentioned, what they're showing us with the research is that each and every one of us has our own uniquely designed brain. And that uniquely designed brain responds to your unique mind in your own unique way. So we can't spend billions, it's a waste of money spending billions of dollars trying to find the normal patterns or what a normal brain looks like so that we can then say to someone from some sort of brain technology that, okay, well, you don't look like that normal brain, therefore this is why you are ill, this is why you do what you do. Can you see that's not logical? Okay, it's not scientific and it's not logical. It's been going on for 50 years now. So much money has been wasted in that direction, and they still don't have what they are looking for, which is the neurobiological correlates of mental ill health. In English, that means they're trying to find the cause in the brain. Okay, it's not in the brain, it's in life. There's a big difference. Okay, so if you're feeling anxious or depressed or have intrusive thoughts or psychotic breaks or feel like you can't cope or you're very sad, you're not ill. It's very real. What you are going through is very real. It's very scary. With the wrong food, you can feel anxious. With the wrong overuse of technology, where you isolate yourself from others and you are designed as a human for deep, meaningful connectedness. So when you're constantly on your technology, which is what you are then merging with, because whatever you think about the most will grow, and you're not having those deep interpersonal relationships, you will get isolated and lonely. Research shows when you feel isolation, your body starts breaking down. People die from isolation. They literally die from isolation. Alongside obesity, isolation is killing more and more people on an annual basis. So that's mismanagement of mind, because with your mind, you choose to go on your phone. With your mind, you choose to get stuck on your phone. And it's designed like a slot machine. So it creates the wrong kind of patterns in the brain. Your brain is separate from your mind. Your brain just does what you tell it to do. So if you keep staring at your phone and you keep refreshing your screen, it has been designed to disrupt the pathways in the brain that you get a temporary high and a temporary release of neurochemicals, and then when that drops very quickly, so you want another high and you look again, and then you're gathering so much data and so much information because you can read this and scroll through this, and so you're constantly connected but you're actually disconnected. And that is very bad and very toxic to the brain. Now, technology is amazing. I have no problem with technology. I love phones and technology and what we can do and how we can be connected. But there's a discipline involved in using it. And I'll talk about that tonight, a little bit more about the discipline of technology. All I want to do is throw out there that when we use technology incorrectly, it's a mind decision. It's a mismanagement of mind. It creates toxicity in the mind, which then means that there's going to be toxicity in the brain, because whatever you do in your mind is reflected in your brain. Your mind works through your brain. Your brain responds to your mind. They are separate things. So if you don't manage your mind, your brain breaks down. If your brain breaks down, your body breaks down. And that toxicity in your brain and your body feeds back into your mind, and you set up a negative feedback loop. But you have a love power and a sound mind. So at any point, you can stand back into your normal, natural love, power, and sound mind, and you can observe the toxic patterns of your life, the toxic choices that you are making, the toxicity from trauma that you've experienced that you maybe haven't dealt with, and you can deal with it. You see, we're in a day and an age where we are told that we are biological machines, and that if you have any kind of suffering or emotional pain, that is just because you have a broken brain, and therefore you just need a label and you just need a drug. But that's not actually the truth. That is called the biomedical model, and it works extremely well for the physical body and the physical brain. So in other words, if you have something wrong with your heart, or if you do have diabetes, you can have blood tests, we can identify that you have an issue with insulin, and you can be given insulin, and you can go on a very strict diet and exercise, and it can be healed. We can test for heart issues, and we can treat heart issues with medications. We can see there's a physical ailment, there's symptoms of a physical ailment, they can be identified through testing, they can be diagnosed, and they can be treated with medication. That is fantastic. Thank God for medicine. But the mind is a different commodity. It is not the brain and it is not the body. So therefore, the rules that apply to the brain and the body do not apply to the mind, because they're separate commodities. They're separate things. The mind is the non-physical part of you. When we talk about non-physical in science, we're talking about spiritual. So the mind is the non-physical, spiritual part of you. So what's your spiritual part? You learn a lot about that in church. And a simple way of understanding your spiritual part is your connection with God, that spirit of life that is in you, and basically your ability to think and feel and choose. Those three things go together. You're a thinking being, you're a feeling being, and you're a choosing being. And you are always thinking 24/7, you are always feeling 24/7, and you are always choosing while you're awake. When you're asleep, you're not choosing, but you're sorting out the results of your choices while you sleep, which is why you dream. Okay? So dreaming is housekeeping that's happening in your brain to fix things up and sort things out, and that's why they're so crazy, because certain parts of your brain switch off physically at night, so your mind, which never switches off, but parts of your brain switch off at night, and it kind of reverses in function, and that's why chairs fly and things never make quite a lot of sense in your brain. So dreams can never be interpreted, because dreams are unique to each person's individual experience, as is your life story. You have a story. You have your unique story. You have a unique way of perceiving the events of your life. One family can go through the same trauma, but there's six people in the family. There will be six different perceptions about that event. So no one experiences life in the same way. No one experiences the same thing in the same way. You know that. This is not something new. But we see that difference reflected in the structure of the brain and in the structure of the body. So your brain is designed to suit your mind. You can't have my brain, I can't have your brain. You can't be me, I can't be you. You make a lousy me, I make a lousy you, you make a great you. Then why do you try and be someone else? The minute you have envy or jealousy, you are trying to be someone else. But you have your own perfect you identity. You have your own, you're made in the image of God. We all say that. What does it mean? It means that you have the wiring inside of you that is aligned with your mind, which is the non-physical part of you, the spiritual part of you, which is your thinking, feeling, and choosing. And that is perfection. You are perfect at your core, and then you make decisions, and that wires imperfection over perfection. So when we make wrong decisions, so sin or toxicity or whatever enters into our life, and it is then you wire toxicity on top of the healthy, normal, perfect you part of you. So this book I call The Perfect You, and it's a blueprint of your identity. You are a blueprint, so you are born with your nature, your in God's image design. We see scientifically your brain and your body are only designed to handle perfection, which is perfect thinking, feeling, and choosing. But God gave you free will. Choose life, choose death. You've got to choose. You're told the whole Bible is telling you about make good choices. If you don't, look what happens. Okay, this it's filled with the stories of what happens when you don't follow your godly design. Okay, and when you do, what happens? So therefore, your godly design, God is perfect. We made in God's image. Therefore, your design is perfect, but you have free will. So we wire imperfection over perfection, and we also have the concept of things passing through the generations. So every choice that you make, as soon as you make a choice, it's the result of your thinking and feeling. You think, you feel, you choose. As you think, feel, and choose, you build a thought into your head. We're going to have a look at a slide now, and this slide is of it's inside the brain, and this in it's you'll see emotion, you'll see movement, and then you'll see things growing. Okay, what you see growing are thoughts, which are memories. They're growing on neurons in your brain. And the little branches that are growing are called dendrites. They look like trees. That's why I've got these trees on the stage. So what you are doing right now is that. You are taking my words, which are sounds, and you are thinking, feeling, and choosing with your mind, the spiritual part of you, the 99% part of you. So that thinking, feeling, and choosing is pushing this energy through your brain, and that's why there's motion and movement. It's your thinking, feeling, and choosing stimulating your brain. Your brain is responding chemically and electrically and genetically. So as you think, feel, and choose, it's like switching on a light. When you switch on the light in a room, the light comes on. When you switch it off, it goes off. Your thinking, feeling, and choosing is the energy that switches your genes on and switches them off. When they switch on, you grow stuff. Okay, you grow what your body needs to keep alive, and you also grow thoughts in your head. So what you are growing are little branches, and those branches are made of millions and millions and millions of little quantum neurobiological computers made of proteins, and they are holding the words that I'm saying and the images that I'm giving you in your brain as little vibrations, little quantum vibrations. So you literally, as you go through the day, you are turning the experience of the day into structural changes inside of your brain. You are creating matter out of mind. You are building physical thoughts into your brain out of non-physical spiritual stuff. You are making the invisible visible, so the scriptures say. You have Genesis creative power in you. You have a love power and a sound mind. Got it? Okay, so I just grounded you back in some scriptures so that you don't get all scared, because the minute people talk science, you think it's something bad. If you don't have science, well then if you say science is bad, you say God's bad. Where does science come from? Where does knowledge come from? It comes from God. So we take the knowledge of God and we use it to understand the truths of God and to understand the practical side of spirituality. And that's pretty much what I'm teaching. In essence, if you want to know one way of understanding what I teach with all my materials, my books, DVDs, online programs, apps, we've got a great app called the Switch app that's coming out very soon. We're going to put a picture of it up on the screen now. If you follow us on YouTube, subscribe to my YouTube channel, my podcast channel, follow us. Follow up my email, sign up for my email letter, you'll get information, you'll be told when all our new stuff is coming out. But essentially all of that is to help you renew your mind. I give so much stuff for free on my podcasts and my websites and everything. My website, it's stuff there that is valuable. If you follow me on Instagram, every day I'm giving you all the stuff that I'm giving you in a large amount of information now in bite-sized chunks. There's more in my books. I am doing what I can to help you to use your mind, but I can't make you do it. You have to read. You have to choose. So we get knowledge to use the knowledge. So we need to build our brain. So in learning how to use my stuff, not only are you getting stuff that is going to prevent you from mismanaging your mind and becoming one of those statistics, but you also are setting alive a pattern that will last for eternity. Because every thought that you build into your brain, and you saw how that was happening, is something that lives for eternity. Ladies and gentlemen, every thought that you think, and you build somewhere between 8,000 and 80,000 thoughts a day, every single one is alive for eternity. So you need to decide, what do you want alive for eternity, and what do you want structurally in your brain? Because when you think, feel, and choose and build that information into structural changes in your brain, and into non-physical, it also goes into your mind in a non-physical form. So every memory or thought that you build, which is alive for eternity, is in double form. It's in the non-physical, spiritual part of you, and it is in the physical structure of your brain. You need to think about those thoughts that you are building, because they are matter. You've created mind out of matter, and the matter that you create matters. Because it's alive for eternity, and it is affecting your physical functioning. Because the little computers that hold these memories are controlling every physical function in your body. Let me say that again. Your thoughts are held in these little computers, in these branches, and you build them as you think, feel, and choose. And those little computers are controlling your cell division moment by moment and every function of your physical body. There is a direct mind-brain connection that God has designed, and this is why we have to renew our minds. This is why I'm teaching you renewing of your mind principles, so that you can do this on a daily basis. Because the scriptures in Romans 12:2 tell us that we are supposed to be renewing our minds. Not now and then, it is a lifestyle. People are dying from preventable lifestyle diseases, and the primary lifestyle disease that's killing people is not renewing the mind. It's mismanagement of mind. Can you see how serious this is? Can you see that if you have been raped or abused or traumatized in some way, and you suppress this, and you go to your doctor and you're sad, and your doctor says, oh, after a few questions that have literally nothing to do with you, your story, your context, your narrative, they simply, what are your symptoms? And you describe, I'm sad, I can't get out of bed, I feel on edge, I just can't cope anymore, it's just too tough, I'm battling in my relationship, boom, 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 you've got enough ticks there, you have clinical depression. What on earth? What about you and your story? Maybe you just loved your spouse. I mean, just lost your loved one that you've just spent years with. Maybe you just experienced some really traumatic accident where you saw someone die in front of you. Maybe you were that child that was abused. Maybe you were raped as a teenager when you went to university. Maybe, who knows what your story is, but you have a story. And by someone sitting there and presuming to know what you have gone through, that is terrible. And for someone to say, after a few minutes of you describing your symptoms and not even hearing your story or just glossing over your story and saying that you have a broken brain, you have an illness, that is not right. That works if you really did have diabetes. That works if you really did have a heart issue, or if you did have cancer cells in your body and so we're starting to get some sort of cancer or whatever. Or you did have an autoimmune disorder or something. That works, but it doesn't work when you have been through the human condition, the sufferings of life. It's a different context. It's a psychological, spiritual context. So therefore, the rules that work for the physical brain and the body, where you can diagnose from the symptom and treat with a medication or some sort of physical treatment, do not work for the brain. You cannot say a rape is an illness in the brain. You cannot say that the death of a loved one is an illness in the brain. You cannot say that observing someone dying in front of you is an illness in the brain. You cannot say that if you have been attacked and mugged and nearly murdered, that that's an illness in the brain because now you're feeling anxious about walking around. You cannot say if you've hit major financial crisis in your life and you can't feed your family, that you have an illness in your brain. You cannot say if you are in the middle of somewhere like India and you're living in a poverty-stricken environment where you have no food, where you're living off the scraps on a heap of trash, and you've got no home for your children, and you're sick and dying, and they're starving, and a bunch of psychiatrists, and this has happened, they did a PhD study, they took a bunch of psychiatrists into this, set up a clinic in the middle of one of the most poverty-stricken areas of India, called these people in, did a checklist symptom that was not even culturally appropriate, didn't consider any of their socioeconomic conditions, and labeled them all with a mental illness, and gave them drugs. So now the one woman turned around and she said, I am starving. I am sick. My children are dying because I can't feed them. And now you tell me I'm sick as well? That I've got that I'm crazy? That I've got a damaged brain? Can you see the illogic of a mismanaged mind? And this whole thing, when you take these drugs, those kind of drugs, and when I say those kind of drugs, what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen, are psychotropic drugs. Psychotropics are antidepressants like Prozac, anti-anxiety medications like the benzodiazepines, okay, then as stimulants like Ritalin, and psychotics like Risperidone. And there's many of them out there. They are drugs that were identified around about 60 years ago, the first one, and it was a form of an anesthetic. They've discovered that if you give a lower dose, people don't go to sleep, but they calm down temporarily. But then they said, wow, we found the next great drug, because psychiatrists wanted to be like doctors that could diagnose and give a doctor, and they are doctors, but they wanted to be in the same category because scientific medicine was considered to be evidence-based medicine, which was considered to be you've got to see a symptom, you've got to find it biologically, and you've got to give a medicine. If you don't do that, you're not practicing, you're not really a real doctor. So there was a lot of psychological things going on in that profession, and there was also a lot of money to be made by creating drugs that control people. But essentially what those four categories of drugs do is they do not fix the brain. Let me stress, they do not fix the brain. They're as dumb as saying if you are a bit socially inadequate and you find that having a glass of wine makes you a bit calmer and you're a bit better than in a social environment, so you have your glass of wine, then you find you're not as anxious. Does that mean that you have a sickness where alcohol is missing from your brain? But that's the logic that's been used with these drugs. So now you're anxious or you're depressed, or you take this drug, it suppresses your emotions, it disables your brain, they disconnect the spirit and the mind, kind of, they have a sort of disconnect effect between who you really are, because your brain gets so numbed. They are numbing the brain, they are disabling the brain, they are numbing the emotional centers of the brain, they're doing damage cognitively to the brain, they are literally wiping out the brain, and that's why they have so many side effects, and that's why they are so addictive, because they affect pathways in the brain, and that goes for all of them, and they all affect the brain. The four categories of those drugs affect the brain in different ways, and so they're not healing the brain, they're not restoring a chemical that's missing. We are told that depression is a result of a chemical imbalance. That's not even science. Not even top scientists from Harvard, Yale, anyone who considers himself a scientist doesn't say that. It's not. It's basically just a nice, trendy way of selling medication. And doctors that do say it, and I'll say this very directly, I work with teams of doctors. I train doctors around the world. They know my opinion. Some do and don't like what I say, but it's a fact. I have teams of doctors that work with me. Okay, and the doctors that say the chemical myth exists are doctors that are not informed. They are not up to date with the research. They are misinformed. They haven't read the research. I've spent 30 years studying this stuff and reading this research. And as I said, I work with some of the top psychiatrists in the world, neurosurgeons, neuroscientists. We do clinical trials together. I work with endocrinologists. I work with some of the top people in the world to try and bring truth to humanity in terms of showing you that it is your mind. You don't need the drugs to suppress what you don't need drugs to deal with your pain. Okay, you need to deal with your pain through dealing with your pain. Jesus modeled this in the Garden of Gethsemane. Did Jesus go and ask for a psychotic to knock him out? Did he take any herbs to knock out the pain? No. Jesus faced the pain. He faced that cross. So we see it as one. We always get taught that the cross, and I'm not denying that there's the message of the cross, but there's always layers of meaning to what God reveals to us. So don't go in a simple one lane of understanding when you read the Bible. The cross models how we are supposed to deal with human suffering. Life is tough. Bad things happen to good people. Terrible things happen. You may get crucified. So that cross is that thing that you're facing. Maybe your kids are this, or your husband that, or your wife this, or your mother-in-law this, or your child this. I don't know what's going on in your life. Maybe socioeconomic. Maybe you've come back from war. Maybe you have seen the most terrible things. We are not wired to murder people. We're not wired to watch people being blown apart in front of us. We're not wired to have to go and shoot kids because they're the enemy. So when someone comes back from the war and they get told they have PTSD, they've got a broken brain, that is not solving the problem. That is exacerbating the problem. What we need to do is you be human again. Do what Jesus did. Love people. Listen to people. You do not need a PhD or to be a psychiatrist or to be a doctor or to be a licensed counselor to help someone. You just need to be who you are, which is human, who love people. They have shown, the research shows, and I was I'm a licensed clinical therapist. I have 4 degrees. I ran in practice for 25 years, and I learned very early on, I never told my patients what to do. I never tried to presume that I understood their experience. One of the first things I would say to them is, tell me your story. I never used the tools that I was, all kinds of therapy tools and programs, I never used those. I, right from the beginning, was in this, I honestly believe God led me in this direction. I would sit there and say, tell me your story. And I would listen. And I would often not say a lot for a long time. And then when they started obviously opening up and letting the emotions out and showing that they maybe it reflected in how they were battling at school. Maybe they had a learning disability at school, or they were battling with whatever kind of battling at work. So we would look at the things that were this was affecting and try to get to the root of the cause. But I couldn't do that for them. I couldn't sit in front of someone who's a veteran, or sit in front of someone who's been through trauma, or sit in front of someone who's got a major learning disability and presume to know what they've gone through, nor can you. But what I can do is listen. What you can do is listen. You can listen without judging. You can listen without advising. You can listen without saying, use this little magic trick and it's going to go away. You can also listen without saying, oh, I'll pray for you and think you passed the buck. Don't use pass the buck prayer. If you're going to pray for someone, it's actually prayer is a form of listening. Take the time to tune in, look at them, listen to them, and say something rather like, which is way better, something rather like, I haven't been through what you've been through, but I am crying with you. And I know if I was in that and went through that, I would react even worse than what you have. Or something like that. Don't presume to know what they've gone through. Don't throw some blatant, oh, God will heal you on top of that. It's the worst thing. It's like shoving God in someone's face in completely the wrong way. God is love. You don't do that. You listen. We listen. When you take the time to tune into people and listen, when you hear their story, you are helping them deal and manage their mind. You know, research shows that it's not about the fancy technique. It's not about the fancy white coat. It's not about the medication. The medications cause the side effects, as we said. And I'm talking now mind stuff, okay? I'm not talking about like heart disease and so on. I'm talking about the mental side of things. It's not about any of those. Do you know what it's about? The relationship. When they actually look at the impact of all the techniques that are out there for therapy, they find that the main reason that therapies work to a certain extent, they're not very sustainable, unfortunately, which means they don't carry over very well. But the main reason that they start the process is because someone sat down and listened to me. Even if they didn't listen to all my story, you sat with me one-on-one and you connected with me with eye contact and you started listening. It's about the relationship. You are designed for relationship. The church is one of the ideal places. If you want to be places of healing, I would advise a church to spend more time listening than raising your arms and singing. And that may sound sacrilegious in church, but it's not, because that's true worship. True worship is caring for each other, loving each other, reaching out to each other, helping each other. What is your story? I love you enough and I care enough for you to sit down and listen. Stick a bench outside. I call it bench therapy. Put a bench. And if you sit in that bench, it's a safe space. That's where you can sit and be listened to. No judging. No, I'm better than you. And no one's exempt from needing to sit on that bench, because every single one of us is in the human condition. Every single one of us is struggling with something, and it may be okay today, but tomorrow may be a different story. So don't pretend that it's not going to happen, because life is tough, but you control your reactions. You can control that. And if you've been on a medication, if you're suffering from anxiety and depression and you've had a label, let me free you from that label. Don't take ownership of that label. You can't have bipolar depression because it doesn't exist. But you can be very sad and very depressed because you've been through something terrible. And I have total empathy and I tune into you and I'm not diminishing. In fact, I'm acknowledging. By saying that you have clinical depression and giving you a medication, I am not acknowledging your pain. But by saying I recognize that your depression that you are feeling right now is a symptom of an underlying something. Let me listen and let me love. How can I listen to you? How can I love you? How can I help you? That is far more effective and far more helpful than just being told that you have a label which will stigmatize you. Follow your insurance money that you pay. Follow your jobs that you look for, and people will think you're crazy and you're too scared to tell them. So it's stigmatizing, and it's unnecessarily stigmatizing. It's okay to struggle. It's okay to be a little bit crazy. It's okay to be depressed. It's okay to be anxious. Please go and read David. That guy was like so depressed and anxious all the time and making so many toxic decisions. And so were most of the stories of the Bible. They're all crazy, all depressed, all toxic, all anxious. When you're anxious, it tells you that your life's gone off balance. Embrace the anxiety, because it's a message that your body is feeling is reacting to something that is there. By taking a drug and numbing it, when the drug wears off, it's still there. It's not a disease coming back. You're not disease resistant because the drug didn't work for you. You don't need polypharmacy. You don't need another 10 drugs to try and suppress it more, because that's what happens. If one doesn't work for you, take another. And if that doesn't work, let's put you on a combination of three. So let's put you on two antidepressants and one psychotic now because you're showing psychotic. Meanwhile, those are damaging your brain. Now, if any of you here have been diagnosed, do not feel guilt. You didn't know. Don't let guilt and condemnation and shame keep you stuck. Guilt, condemnation, and shame are terrible, toxic things that keep us stuck. And the church writes more books about guilt, shame, and condemnation than any other environment. I wonder why, when this is supposed to be where we get free from that stuff. Because, oh, sister, you didn't pray enough. You don't have enough faith. That's why you're depressed. Don't do that, because you are projecting your own depression and your own guilt. Be careful that you are not guilting other people. And don't let guilt keep you caught. If you feel guilt, it's a good thing, because it's a prompt for you to recognize something I'm doing is not right. If you feel shame, embrace it. Okay, what is this shame? What is this anxiety? What is this depression? Embrace it. Celebrate the toxicity. Now, that sounds so weird, but here's the truth. Celebrate and embrace in terms of being aware. Because now you are aware. Now you know what your cross looks like. Now you understand the Gethsemane. Now you know that cross is the root cause of the depression. The symptom is, the depression is just the symptom. The anxiety is just the symptom. It's just my body reacting. The feelings of intrusive thoughts, the psychotic breaks, the disconnect, the voices I'm hearing. All of those are just my poor brain and body are reacting to something undealt with, either a very toxic trauma or a very toxic choice that has become a habit in my life. So that's the cross. That's what I'm facing, and that's what I need to face, and I need to bleed and sweat and cry and what I call freak out in the love zone. That's the love zone where you see the green tree, you're wired for love. This is the fear zone. So you go in the zone, you shout, scream, even if you have to swear. It's not the end of the world. You will not go to hell if you swear. It's a way of expressing yourself. I'm not encouraging you to do it, but I don't care what you do in this zone, because you're in God's arms, and you will have wisdom, and you will step into the wisdom of God, and you will face the reality, and you will cry through the struggle. You need to face it, because that struggle is part of you. It shapes you. You need to go through. You need to sweat through, because you will go through. And you can't do it alone. You will die from isolation. People die from isolation. Research shows that one of the major things also in this preventable lifestyle, people dying younger, is isolation. That is a mind thing. Why are you isolating yourself from others? Why aren't you as the church finding the lonely people? Where are all the lonely people? Go re-listen to the Beatles. Okay? They are all around you. They are all around you. You talk about loving God. Why aren't you loving God through people? It's not about looking cool at church on Sunday and singing loudly and raising your hands. That means nothing. What means everything is, are you looking at that lady who wasn't at church last week, and she wasn't at church the week before, but I did see her a month ago, and she looked really sad. Let me go and find out how I can go and contact that lady, because maybe she's sitting at home, and she's got no food because she's got no money. She can't get to church, or she's just lost her child and she can't cope. That's what worship is. That is a lifestyle of prayer. That is really being real. And that is management of mind. You see, You're going to need to pay forward what you're going to receive, because there's going to come a day when someone will knock on your door and say, hey, I noticed you weren't to church last week. Or I noticed that you look really sad at church. Can I do something for you? Can I take you out? That might be a text you send them. That's a good use of technology. It might be an email. It might be a phone call. I don't know what. But when you are tuned into love, you will tune into each other. And you will see the needs in each other. And as you pay forward that what you've received, so you increase your own healing by a factor of 68%. So let me say what that means again. So let's say you're feeling really sad and you really need help and you come up for prayer and then but it's like instant on the spot. You know, Oral Roberts used to say people lose it by the time they get to the parking lot. Well, that's because, and same thing with therapy, go out the therapy session and it's gone. That's, what do you think was happening? The person praying for you, the connection, that's what's really happening there. And that means that that person is connecting into the power of God like a radio. And when you tune into love, you're connecting to God. Do you know how a radio works? It's a little electronic box that takes a non-physical wave and converts it into a sound wave. That's what we do. And we go and pray for someone. When we listen to someone, when we tune into someone else's need, we are connecting to love. We are allowing the love of God to flow through us and convert through us so that we speak that word in season, which is generally not any kind of anything. St. Francis of Assisi, if anything, say nothing. You know, like love someone without saying much. You don't have to say much to help people. You don't have to plow 1,000 scriptures at them. You do not have to give them 1,000 techniques. What you need to do is listen. And when you are listening in love in a non-judgmental way, you are allowing the wisdom of God and the love of God to flow through you like a radio. And the non-physical love wave from God is converting through you, and you are speaking life into that person without saying much, by just listening with your eyes, with all the energy. You are pouring out all this love energy, and then as you're helping them, then the day comes when you feel bad and they do the same to you. So it's always pay it forward. It's not all about me. We are an over-therapeutized society. Everyone wants to get counseled and coached and therapeutized, and meanwhile, we don't need that. We've got so much power inside of us. What we should be doing is, normal humans, get away from, I need a therapist, I need a counselor, I need a this, I need a that, me, myself, and I. Get into this. I am made in God's image. I am wired for love. There's something I can do that no one else can do. I have this blueprint in me, and I've made some really bad decisions, but I'm standing in love, and that's not who I am, that's who I have become. So I will get into a renewed habit of detoxing my brain every day. I will get into the renewed habit of training myself to connect with the Spirit of God, to connect with love every 10 seconds, because neuroscience shows us that we can connect with the Spirit of God every 10 seconds. We can connect with truth and wisdom every 10 seconds. You are designed to self-regulate your thinking and your feeling and your choosing and your words and your actions and your impact on yourself and others every 10 seconds. You are designed to be very aware of what is in front of you, and you are designed to be very aware of monitoring and changing that. Your brain is brilliant. Your mind is brilliant. You are so powerful. You are creating your next reality every single moment of every single day, and that reality does not have to be a constant mess. And when you do make a mess, it's okay. Don't stay there. Just say, okay, yes, I'm anxious. Oh, good thing. Remember, Caroline said, it's a good thing. All right, why is it a good thing? Step into the zone. Why am I anxious? Let's find the root and let's destroy the root. Let's detox this root. And it's not instant. It doesn't go away instantly. As you become aware and you confess and all that, you know, your forgiveness and all that stuff is instant. But the process we see in the Garden of Gethsemane, there is a process. That 3 days is not just 3 days. That 3 days is time. It takes time for things to change. And what we find is that in science, that once you have physically built something into your brain, it takes 21 days to build a long-term memory, and it takes 63 days to build a habit. Not 21 days to build a habit. It takes somewhere between 63 and 84 days to build a habit. So if you've got some toxic habits in your life, you have spent at least 7 minutes every day for at least 63 days practicing that toxic habit. Isn't that an eye-opener? So if you're doing something toxic, if you constantly react in a certain way that is toxic and it's affecting you physically, your relationships, and remember that thing's alive, it's going into the next generations, okay, so you need to reconceptualize it. But if you're doing it and you're doing it pretty well, it means that you're becoming an expert at being toxic in something. It means that you've practiced daily. like an athlete has to practice daily to get to the Olympic Games or something like that, or to become a good athlete at something. We practice with our mind. Okay, sport as well is driven by the mind. Everything's driven by the mind. But we apply it very easily to sports and to skills, but we're really bad as humans in applying it to the spiritual nature, to the mind, to the psychological. And that's what we need to do. So if we apply a physical model to the mind, then we're just going to take the drug, suppress the drug, numb the brain, and just absorb that label and just become that label. And then your life, then you're going to, because those drugs do shorten lifespan by 15 to 25 years. Did you know that? The average drug, the average psychotropic, antidepressant, etc., shortens lifespan somewhere between 15 to 25 years. I have 3,000 plus side effects. Okay, so if you are on a drug, one of these four, antidepressant, antipsychotic, stimulant, or an anti-anxiety med, don't feel guilty. That's why I've given this whole speech about guilt, etc. Don't feel guilty. Be excited. Why? Because now you have knowledge. You have new information. Be very excited because your brain is neuroplastic. What does that mean? Your brain can change. As you renew your mind, as you bring all thoughts into captivity to Christ Jesus, as you learn about your identity and how to operate in love, and as you learn how to rewire the brain, and as you learn how to build the brain, your brain will heal. You don't just stop the drugs. These drugs have changed your brain. Whatever you think changes your brain, changes the structure of your brain. Whatever you eat changes the structure of your brain. Whatever drug you take, even aspirin, will change the structure of your brain. Everything changes the structure of your brain. Psychotropics change it dramatically in a very negative way. The good news is when you renew your mind, your brain can heal. So you don't just stop them. Because of the changes that have occurred in your brain, you have to withdraw carefully. And when people go through withdrawal, if anyone in this room has ever been through withdrawal, you do not have to put up your hand. Or if you've had a loved one who's been through it, it's nightmarish. Okay, it's scary. But if you know what's coming up, if you have knowledge, if you're aware that it's going to take around about 63 days to wean yourself off that drug, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter, then you will find that your body then adjusts. But you just stop it overnight. It could bring a lot of suicidal thoughts, aggressive thoughts, tremendous depression, physical ailments. So it's very important that if you make the decision to not accept this label, to get off these drugs, that you get into a withdrawal program. Now, I have tremendous amount of information in my books. That's why this toolbox, these four books I call the toolbox. I've got lots of books out there. And the toolbox is Think, Learn, Succeed. I'm going to talk about this tonight. Tells you how to, helps you find your identity, understand mindsets, understand how to build your memory. This book teaches you how to detox, how to understand the mind-brain connection and how to detox these toxic thoughts. I've got an app coming out called the Switch app. I think we put that up earlier on, which incorporates all these principles. This one helps you to understand how to feed your brain and body. And then there's one missing here, The Perfect You. This helps you understand how your identity. In here, there's a profile that I developed for my patients. There's no wrong answer. It's not a personality profile. It helps you understand how you uniquely think, feel, and choose. Very important that you understand how you uniquely think, feel, and choose, because then you can recognize the symptoms of depression, anxiety, intrusive thoughts, hearing voices, psychotic breaks, extreme depression, that you can recognize that those are little warning signs that something inside needs to be dealt with, that you need to address the toxic trauma, all the toxic choices that you've made. You need to address your diet, exercise. Generally, it's the whole lot, but it starts with dealing with something that you haven't dealt with. Okay, so, and then the app kind of puts it all together, the Switch app. And also, as I said, and I can't stress it enough, if you follow me, join my email list, then you can be made aware of the blogs and the podcasts. Everything is designed to help you to do this stuff on a very practical level. So when you understand your mind, then you understand that your mind does everything, then you understand, you start needing to learn how to understand how to manage your mind. In terms of withdrawal, I do have mental health blogs on my webpage as well, and I the withdrawal program that I favor the most, that I've referred most of my patients to, and in our practice still, and that I've referred people to around the world, is one written by a Dr. Peter Bregan, who is a colleague of mine. He's on my team. He's a psychiatrist. He's 82, 83. Still practices. He's been practicing for 50 years. He's never had a suicide. Doesn't prescribe medication. Uses the principles of love. That's why him and I get on. We have the same approach to in dealing with intervention. And anyway, he's on my team as well. And he has a very, very good book called I think it's called Medication Withdrawal. I don't know if you've got an image of it. Anyway, if you just go on my webpage, you'll find, and just Google, search for Peter Bregan, or even just Google Peter Bregan, you will find his withdrawal book. It's one of the best. And it's written, there we go. That one is excellent. And it shows you exactly what to do, helps you understand the drugs, etc. Okay, so I can't do more than I am. I'm trying to show you that if you manage your mind and you manage your diet, you're going to be able to not be one of those statistics. It's one thing coming to church and hearing the scriptures and hearing the truth about spirituality and hearing about God and not building a bridge between that knowledge and what you do in your daily life. And then going back into life and accepting the labels, accepting the drugs, accepting the, you know, the negativity, saying things like, "Oh, I'm not perfect, you know." I cringe every time someone says that. What we need to realize is you are perfect, but you have made mistakes. You have not dealt with a trauma, or you have made toxic choices, which is okay because that's the human condition. It's better to say, "Oops, I'm struggling with that. I'm in the process of dealing with that. I am moving back towards my perfect you nature." You see, you need to reconceptualize. You'll see I talk a lot about that in my work. One of the techniques that I developed a theory and all kinds of stuff. We can just show my theory, an image of my theory, please, Mac. You'll see this image come up in my books with simple explanations of it. But essentially, the core of everything that I'm saying is you need to reconceptualize, which means we need a new narrative. We need a new story. We need to redesign how we're looking at ourselves and at our life and how we are functioning. We need to realize that there is the unique way that we think and feel and choose. And I'll explain that's pretty much what this big, colorful, complex theory image is. I look at how as humans we think, feel, and choose, and as we think, feel, and choose, we do it uniquely, and how it's designed for perfection, and how we can choose, and we can choose wrong, and how we experience life, and that can cause trauma, and that means that we build toxicity in our brain, and that affects how we're functioning mentally and physically. And that's what all this is showing. The green is your spiritual part of you. The green and the purple are the spiritual, non-physical part of you, your unique way you think, feel, and choose. The blue part is your physical brain, is your physical brain and body, and the pink part down the bottom's representing what's going on in your brain. So the blue and the pink part represent 1%, and the green and the purple part represent the 99% spiritual part of you. And it's basically a scientific theory that I have applied into clinical practice and into the books and materials and things that I now teach around the world to help people renew their mind. So that's kind of a scientific thing behind how do I renew my mind. A huge part of renewing your mind is building your brain, and I'm going to talk about that tonight. We have to, one of the biggest ways of improving our mental health is to build our brain, to learn, to gain knowledge. I've talked a lot about that in this book here, Think, Learn, Succeed. That's why I call these four books my toolbox. And they've all got DVDs and online programs and things that go with them to help you. We've got study groups. In fact, what we're doing this year to help people is we're doing a mental health makeover. So every day I put posts up related to one book at a time. So we study this book in January, and I do a YouTube live, which is recorded. So there's four YouTube lives on that already. We're studying this book over the next 2 months. So I do each week, I do a blog, a podcast, and a YouTube live on content in the book. You read, like this week we're going to be studying chapters 5 and 6, I think it is, 5, 6, and 7. And then the podcast and the YouTube live are related to that. The blog is related to that. If you join our email list, you'll be able to get that information. I don't know what more to do to help you. Seriously. I can't get in your head and do it for you. So all I'm saying is stop being part of the statistic, because the world is looking at the church and saying, "Well, you're just as sick as us, so why do we need you?" Okay? You're judgmental. You're horrible. That's not you. That's one out there. All the other churches except this one. But Christians are really ugly people in general, and they're seen as awful people out there. Crazy, horrible, judgmental people. And that's so sad, because God is a God of love. So let me end by saying, what does love look like in your life? Thank you. God bless.